Hearst Ranch beef is 100% grass-fed, free-range, and always antibiotic-free. Our beef will be available in Whole Foods Market's 44 California locations from San Luis Obispo to San Diego throughout the summer beginning June 1st. You can also order our 100% grass-fed beef online as part of a partnership with Larder Meat Company. Visit HearstRanch.com. That's H-E-A-R-S-T, ranch.com.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz.
And I am the other half of your host, Greg Bresnitz.
And we are coming to you from opposite sides of the country to celebrate 450 episodes. Congratulations, Greg, and to everyone at Snacky Tunes, Jeet, Kong, every engineer, everyone who believes in us, and to all the guests who've taken time to sit down to share their stories. We really, it's wild.
Think of an eye, 11 years, just, you know, went by like nothing. I feel like we were just sitting down with Drop the Lime for episode one on a hot July afternoon, and here we are, many, many hours and many, many interviews later. It's congratulations to you as well. You deserve at least half of it.
Yeah, it was interesting. I saw our good friends at Bell's, who are some of our two favorite people, Greg and Daisy, and they had reposted someone who had just discovered Snacky Tunes because they had been on the show, and they posted a link to the very first episode. And my thought was, you have a lot of shows to get through, and hopefully you enjoy at least a third of them.
Yes, and if you enjoy these two almost similar voices, just remember, if it sounds smart and interesting, it's my episode, and if it's a little bit flat, mm-hmm. it's Darren's episode.
Yeah. And in addition to celebrating our 450th episode, we are also so excited to finally be able to publicly talk and announce our first book coming out on Faden this week. It's called Snacky Tunes, Music is the Main Ingredient, Chefs and Their Music. And it really is, in many ways, the best parts of this show in book form. It's 80 of our favorite chefs and restaurateurs from all over the world sharing their favorite stories about music and cooking, creativity. There's recipes, there's playlists, and we're so excited to be able to just give them space to talk about the things that we love and they share why they love it just as much.
Yeah, and I think that if you really like in the episodes past where chefs talk about how music fuels their creativity, inspires them, pushes them, you're really going to love this book. We have just stories from chefs who talk about how they're multi-generational musicians, their grandfather was an oboe player or a band director, how they use different types of music, either when they're cooking at home, they're doing rock and roll, when they're making their recipes, they're using jazz, how they use it to, like, build their restaurants, how they use it to add another audio signature to their restaurants. And if you just are like us and you're fans of people who are fans of music, just telling great music stories, you're going to love this too.
Yeah, so thank you to everyone at Faden. If you go to Faden.com, you can get it there. It's coming out September 3rd worldwide and then October 14th North America. We'll have more announcements, releasing the whole list of chefs, some events coming up. And so, yeah, so it's great. And now on to the episode. We are really, really excited. We're joined by Rose Traore of Rose LLC, based out of New York, incredible chef, fine dining background, now doing his own thing, ex-model, current model, very handsome, and very skilled in the kitchen and doing a lot of work in community. We talk about his creative process and how he's created really his own type of food, his own take on it. And we talk about just what it means to be doing pop-up and events in the time of Corona. And then in the second half, we can't believe it's taken so long, but we sit down with one of our oldest friends, Sean McGinnis, a.k.a. Sean on the Drums, a.k.a. the drummer of Piss Jeans. We talk about his long, lifelong career in music, a little bit of our friendship, his own creative process, and he shares with us some live tracks that he's been working on. So here we go, episode 450. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. your product machines, your product machines, your product machines, product machines, product machines, product machines, product machines. We all have bills to pay, the planes we use, product machine, the computers we log in, and the names we use, product
Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule, sitting down with us. We really appreciate you being on Snacky Tunes.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Definitely looking forward to it. And yeah, getting the conversations going.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I loved about the bio and a little bit of the background that I read on you is that you have always used food to connect with people, which is what we have always felt that food is about, is a great connector, and that it's also a great way to share culture. So, you know, while we can talk about other food, I'd love to talk about your food and the different culture and perspective that you share through the food that you've made all over the world.
Yeah. My food is, you know, everything that I do, I feel like it involves a lot of style, a lot of culture, a lot of, you know, there's always a message behind it. And it's pretty much how it's something that I've developed, you know, the past three years or even 4 years, where, you know, I really grew this passion for just traveling the world and seeing other people's faces when they are enjoying an amazing meal, and, you know, for them to have their own culture, but not really know much about the, you know, other culture across the pond. And so I just always thought, it would be so much better. It would be, cooler for me to try to merge those two worlds together and put that on a plate. And to me, that's the simplest way that I could, you know, describe my cuisine. We're fortunate in this time and age, in this day and age, where you don't really have to specifically say you're going to pigeonhole yourself in French cuisine, Italian cuisine. You know, back in the day, the reason why that was, you know, a requirement was because people didn't really have the they weren't privileged enough to, you know, explore as much as we have, or the opportunity to explore much or travel much, to really get a sense of everyone else that is a part of this world. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's great, because in some of the videos that you did of you traveling and cooking with people, it's a great way to really exemplify what you stand for, your own personal story, and then see someone else's story and what they stand for, and combine those two different perspectives, those two life experiences on a plate, and then share that with a guest.
Yes, exactly.
So going a little bit back, a little bit deeper into your life and childhood, there's a story that you talk about recovering from heart surgery, I believe, and the kitchen being a place of healing and safety after you got out of surgery. Why do you think food has this ability, or the kitchen has this ability, especially a home kitchen,
to be safe, to offer healing, and how have you used that throughout your life?
Yeah, I think, you know, after the surgery, I was, you know, this is my prime time where, you know, most kids are getting into sports and being active. Right. And, you know, unfortunately for me, that was kind of like a block in my life because that's, you know, where the doctor noticed I had to have my second open heart surgery, which, you know, it holds you back from doing any physical activities. So that had me into the recovery mode. And the closest thing, I think the reason why food became such a connection was because I was able to relate to it in a more sensitive manner, even though I was young. It was very comforting. It was very approachable to my senses. And in a sense, it was kind of like my pillow to kind of just study that whole world. And even though I didn't know half of the things that I know now, or more than half of the things that I know now, in a sense, you know, coming home to my mom making, you know, chicken adobo, or my dad making some, you know, stew or fish. These are things that you're like so pumped about, and you kind of like, you know, you forget about everything else, and it's just like, I am craving this. I'm so happy about, you know, sitting at the table with the family. Plus, at the end of the night, you have your dessert. You get, you know, some ice cream with some toppings. Like, you know, that is food within itself. And so whether you're having a quick snack with, you know, I haven't had this snack in a while, but bologna and, you know, some rice with, you know, or it's spam and rice, or it's, you know, plantains, all of these things really enhances your, you know, that hunger and desire as far as, you know, I'm very curious about what is going on in this world, the culinary world.
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of helping people through food and using it as comfort. How have you helped people with the food that you make? Do you have any stories to share of where you cook for someone, or you put thought into a dish because you knew it was going to help a colleague or family or a friend?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I've done this year is one of the things that I've done is pretty much my friend has this nonprofit organization. His name is Matt James, and the organization is called ABC Food Tours. And what they pretty much do is provide a whole, like, you know, field trip for kids that are in a position to, for example, get great meals, or know about the organic world, or get them into more activities, and they're just a bit less fortunate. And so what I was able to do is take all of these techniques that I've learned for the past 10 years and create a dish for these kids. And, you know, they did some yoga. Then the next person they had to visit was me. And then you find out kids are very honest. Obviously, one is saying, I hate vegetables. One is saying, I hate mushrooms. And so what I made was pretty much a classic chicken roulade, wrapped it in, you know, some bacon. I stuffed it with some hashed mushrooms and herbs, and I, you know, seared that. I cooked that, and then on the side I had some, you know, butter glazed carrots, Brussels. And I was just like, you know, this is what I got for you, and, you know, I'm on the chopping block, if you would say. And they loved it. And so one of the guys saying, I asked one of the, you know, kids, like, I thought you didn't like mushrooms. And he's like, I don't. And then I was like, well, there's mushrooms in there. And he's like, wow, really? And then the girl, she was also saying, like, you know, I didn't, it's great to know what, how, you know, vegetables can really taste like, or, you know, the biggest thing that's unfortunate is, yeah, in some of the areas in this, you know, country, you could say the world, the places that need the most amount of attention, they actually don't, because they get, you know, the crappier supermarket with the, you know, stuffed antibiotic chicken and veggies. And it's just a whole mess. But all you're trying to do is feed your family. So unfortunately, you have to, you know, do what it takes to just make it to that next day. And I say this because at a point in my life, I was also stuck in that predicament, that same predicament, not knowing anything about food. And but I needed to feed myself for that night and, you know, bite my tongue. So that, yeah.
I mean, you wound up studying at Le Cordon Bleu, which is about as classical, well, I guess, if you're looking at it from like a European-centric sort of view of cooking, type of school. And, you know, even today is seen as one of the upper echelons of again, a European-centric type of food. But you drew you in and you embraced it, but you also understood that you were bringing a different perspective than some of the other chefs there. And you've created a whole different type of approach and mentality to it, which you've seen through your food and things like that. But you talk about taking all of your different experiences and applying it to fine dining cuisine. So, you know, if you're into fine dining cuisine, which it seems like you are, there's a certain love for it because you really got to love it. So what do you love about it? And what do you love about all the different cities that you've been able to cook in and experience and take these fundamentals, but make it your own?
I think it's important to have a base, have a starting point, which was Le Cordon Bleu. Then, you know, you pretty much get handed this whole script as far as these are this is the timeline that you must meet. You go to a school, you go to the Michelin restaurant, you work at a, you know, top restaurant under a chef, and then you keep doing that for years, move up the ladder. And, you know, for me, I did those things, but it was one of those things where I realized very early on that, you know, I do not want a restaurant. I've been saying this for the past 4 years, you know, maybe you could say even five, but it was like, I don't want a restaurant. I knew that from the get-go. At this point in my life, I approach my lifestyle as a chef kind of like a musician. Like, I want to continue to, if I'm making a dish, I want to continue to tour the world and spread my love, spread that passion, spread that cuisine to as many people as I can, and come back to my base, which some would say, you know, when I got done doing that, I wanted to, you know, push myself, get some knowledge at, let's say, 11 Madison Park. I went and did that for a year, and then I was also able to draw myself back out and get back on the road. With that being said, I think Michelin food is, to answer your question, is something, what I love about it is that search and that discipline as far as perfection, that camaraderie as far as getting together and having one mission, which is just putting the food out at the highest level as you know, high standards that you can get it at and beyond. And so, with that being said, I like to take a little bit of that, and also my goal is to make that approachable to the, you know, home cook, if you would say.
Yeah, but, and beyond that, showing what food can be, I mean, to tie it back to what you're saying about the food you're cooking for the ABC program,
yeah,
you're using techniques and terms and approaches that you learned at Le Cordon Bleu, but then serving it up in an approachable way that really highlights what ingredients can be. I mean, look, I grew up eating raw white button mushrooms until I was like 18 and thought that mushrooms are the worst thing in the world. And then you get out into the world and you get, you know,
Hen of the wood,
you get a porcini that's been just cooked in brown butter and you go like, exactly. Oh no. Mushrooms are the best. But
add some, you know, duck fat, something.
Yeah. But there is that amazing, I don't know who you're proving it to more than just yourself, that you're like, I went to the top of the mountain. I went to the school. I went to 11 Madison Park and I took all this knowledge and I said, thank you for the knowledge. I'm going to go do my own thing.
Yes. I think one, it starts with the level that I see myself at and the route that I see myself at within the future. A lot of chefs, you know, we're humble characters. And so this is totally acceptable. But, you know, usually chefs are just like, I want to just cook the food, put my head down, crank it out, turn off the lights. What I was able to do and I was able to understand early on was also that the fact that I was able to even reach a bigger audience through me being like a TV personality and really showing my style of cooking to the world. And I've learned that through modeling. Like, you know, with modeling, you do all of these castings. You know how you got to know how to be on. You got to know how to turn it off. You got to know how to, you know, react to different, you know, people. And in a sense, I see myself in that middle bridge where I am, you know, bringing those two worlds together. You know, there's nothing that is, it's wild when I go to like a fashion event that is supposed to be all exclusive and it's, you know, let's say it's your Vanity Fair party and then I'm like the only chef there. And, you know, to some people, unless you know me, that you would never expect that. And that is something that I also love because it's like, you know, I'm here representing my guys, my people, which is in the food world, because that always came first.
I love it. Well, look, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to talk about your company and the events you've been doing, but then also how it's shifted in the last few months with everything going on. We have a quick song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Come around.
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We have Chef Rose Traore. How'd I do on that?
You killed it.
Okay. I tell you, I'm always nervous about names. But
you got it.
We were talking a little bit about your company, you know, getting all this knowledge and going off and knowing that you want to start your own thing, which, you know, I would say maybe pre-March, pre-pandemic, people may have been like, starting your own thing. Don't you want to go work in a restaurant? But now I feel that since you've had a runway of doing your own events and a different way of thinking of the way of serving food and a restaurant as a business, you know, because the old business model is out the window, you probably have a leg up, especially since you have a story and you're something that's unique.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've talked a little bit about why you wanted to start your own thing, but can you talk about how you got it off the ground and how you've switched things up over the last few months?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the company's been around for 3.5 years. And so it's one of those things that I was able to still manage with the team and also step foot in a restaurant, as crazy as that might sound. But it's something that you build up and it takes a long time to where, fortunately, it's helping me. Like, I don't have to start from ground zero because it still is in my path, regardless of, you know, the pandemic. Obviously, business has slowed down, but in other areas, it picked up. And so I started off pretty much with my friend's catering, you know, company, you know, 6 years ago, and his company was Beck and Call. And we pretty much capitalize off of all of the, you know, does photo shoots in the city, whether that's Ralph Lauren, Ferragamo, yeah, Victoria's Secret, you name it. We just got to this point where, you know, I would be the chef and he would pretty much be the front of the house. And I just got to the point where it's like, we could make better food. Thank you for, you know, trying to book me for this job, but I much rather, you know, cook the food. So that was pretty much my taste within the whole catering sense. And it wasn't until I moved to London for 2 years that I was able to get some clients of my own. Let's say, you know, it's a soccer, you know, professional athlete that I was actually cooking for, rather than, you know, in a name with an umbrella. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I was like, I want to start doing more of these and traveling. And that's how I really molded Rose Traore LLC, because we were able to have that closer connection with the client, create that experience with them, which is, you know, a very bespoke experience. It's classic. It speaks everything that we believe as chefs, and you are very you're within every step. And so, yeah, that is how I pretty much got started. And I continue to just mold the company through that.
You know, a lot of people, not a lot of people, but I know people who are either these chefs who jump from place to place 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, and then say, I'm going to go do my own thing. Or they've never gotten the fundamentals of food, which is fine. But then they go into business and they don't really know how to put in structure or how to rely on technique. And look, it takes all kinds. And some people who don't have those traditional things wind up succeeding. But a lot of the times they run into a lot of, I don't know, hardships. But with your fine dining background and with your experience of going to sort of the upper echelons of dining, what have you been able to apply from that world, and what have you taken to pop-ups and things like that that you haven't seen in other types of pop-ups?
I think it's one of those things where it's one, it's the face. You know, chefs are very humble, but I truly believe that chefs are in a sense, you know, rock stars. We're, you know, constantly, we definitely know how to, you know, live the life. But as far as the approach, I feel like, you know, it's something, one of the most unique things about it is, one, as an African-American chef, I think there needs to be a different portrait that is projected to the public, meaning usually when you see an African-American chef, he or she is either cooking Southern food or African food. And, you know, I've just been tired of seeing that same stereotypical role, as if there isn't any, you know, fine dining, like, you know, African-American chefs within the fine dining world excelling. And it's one of those where, yes, the numbers are off when it comes to, you know, the chefs within the fine dining world, but this is what I'm representing, which is, you know, that's classic route that I grew up on. You know, Southern food, African food, delicious. I'm all about it. But it simply isn't what I grew up on. I grew up on a bit of African food, which I still add to my, you know, cuisine. But what I want to continue to represent is, and I take with pride, is the African, you know, American chefs within the culinary space. So I don't know if that, I know I'd go a little left lane when you ask me some of the questions, but yeah.
No, I think that in many ways there's a confidence in saying, I did what you asked of me, especially in, you know, what is considered a fine dining and like a European or classical American type of approach. I went to school, did the hierarchy, but then, you know, even that experience said, I know what I want to do and I don't want you to pigeonhole me. And to have that confidence that you can say, I can play in your world or I can cook your food if you want, but I'm going to make it my own, answers the question that I think we were asking.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's the perfect route. Now, some may say, well, this is the pandemic, whether you want it or not, your business as a bespoke chef and traveling has came to a complete halt. Yes, you're right about that to some degree, mm-hmm. but what brings joy out of me is the fact that that isn't anything that is stopping me from my mission as a chef, because I am able to collaborate with chosen brands to be on their platform and share everything that I have to offer, not to an exclusive crowd now, but to a larger audience, whether that's, you know, Oliver Peoples or you know, champagne company, or you know, just doing a quick commercial. You know, these are the things that fortunately I've been able to dabble in and still have a voice.
I mean, your voice and your perspective and your having a message has seemed to be a defining part of your career, with your head up and not just, you know, down grinding it out and things. And
yeah,
one of the things that I love that you focused on, which I'm sure you actually probably saw in your modeling days as well, is mental health. Because yes. I think any sort of professional industry where you can be a model or you can be a chef, and sometimes mm-hmm. you are felt that you are just replaceable or you're just under a grind to be this, to fit this form, can be heavy. And we've seen a lot of stories coming out in the last few weeks, few months, about how toxic restaurants and kitchens really can be. Mm-hmm.
But I think, it is not a secret. But what's even what what is the whole thing about it is you only get this experience through being in that, in this environment. Like, no one else can feel that pain other than you and your fellow chefs. And it's something that, yeah, you are literally putting every single thing into this craft, this dish, to just, you know, it's a daily grind, sometime, you know, 15 hours, 16. And it's one of those things when you cut, it's, you're at, I like to say it in a sense is like, you know, every day I was getting in the kitchen, I was, you know, going to war with my, you know, my chefs, my friends, my brothers, sisters, because we knew it was about to go down for service on that Saturday night, Friday night, but yeah, buckle up and we're going to get that cranking. And so when you get out, when you leave that environment and it's, you know, it's accomplishing, but in a sense, you really forget that you're really beating yourself up, and it's taking everything out of you. And so one of the important things that I also wanted to put out there was, you know, I want chefs to still feel like they will still be highly respected and get that same look as far as them saying, I'm a private chef, and I'm giving them another platform to be considered an amazing chef. And other than just putting themselves just in the kitchen, you know, like I said, it's a stepping ground being in the kitchen. You need to know your fundamentals. But as far as, you know, a mental state, I want to let my brothers and sisters know that I know exactly what you feel getting out of that kitchen at, you know, 1 a.m. I know exactly how you feel getting on your knees, scrubbing all of this steel, your stove. I know exactly how you feel to the T. And just check out my world. Let's, you know, I'll bring you in as far as, you know, the clientele that I cook for. And we could create, we are the ones that are creating the culture for the next generation. And so you can be a part of this. And so that is something that I've been working on, and I've constantly been telling, you know, guys in the kitchen whenever they approach me, like, how are you doing this? Or, you know, it's just, you need to build that confidence within yourself and execute things that, you know, you dream of executing.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate you saying that it's okay to put your own dreams and your own words and your own self into food, even if you're cooking for someone else. And to be, you know, I am a person. And yes, I'm in your kitchen, and yes, there is a hierarchy, but I'm still an individual.
Exactly. Like, you need to pick yourself up, and you need to make that step, make that move, or you're never going to, you know, you're just going to be waiting, for example, on that investor that you're, you know, somehow trying to run into to invest in your restaurant. Or, you know, it's all starts with that first step and you starting your own concert.
Yeah. Now, you've also been using your social platforms and your voice to talk about the social revolution that we're going through right now.
Yeah.
Where do you think that food, chefs, yourself fits into what's going on with this culture right now? What do you feel is your responsibility here? And I know you've talked a little bit about this, about, you know, African-American chefs and what they, what people might think they have to cook, but what you like cooking and what you like showing. But I'd love to hear a little bit more about where you think your role is in this.
I think my role into this is, you know, a lot of the times, I think my role into this is going into going to all of my situations, pretty much, I go into it not caring race, not caring color, and it always feels great. But it always feels great when you see someone that looks like you, into a world that you're not familiar with or you're trying to get into. And so I want to continue to, you know, put that weight on my shoulder and other fellows that are within the industry, whether it's Asian, whether it's, you know, Hispanic, whatever you are, I think it's our job to continue to stand forward and draw the positive vibes from that to where people are more comfortable within what they're getting into. Then we could get on to feeding the world and introducing the world to our style. But it all starts with humanity, and it all starts with equality. And, you know, we have a long, long way to go.
Yeah.
All of us.
Yeah. I think that sums it up very well, that it's a start and there's a long road in front of us.
Exactly.
Now, as we look to the future and your future, what do you hope the future holds for you and for Rose LLC? And when you finally do get back into cooking and doing your pop-ups and things like that, have you thought about the first song that you're going to play when people sit down for dinner? And the vibe you're going to create when people finally get to come out and eat again in, you know, let's say when there's a vaccine and people aren't worried about getting sick and going out to eat.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mean to be like a Debbie Downer and all, but music wise, it would be, I've been loving Bob Dylan, Blowing in the Wind. I've just been listening to that on repeat. That's my vibe right now, and I just love the message behind it. And so it would be that. If you want to step it up a bit, I'll play some, you know, Bob Marley, Empire of the Sun, to Back to the Rolling Stones. So yeah, all over the place.
I mean, I think when people go out and they sit down to eat and they hear that first song with the message, and you just get into the vibe, and the food's coming, and the drinks are pouring, and the conversation's going. Oh man, I miss it.
You're celebrating.
It's a celebration. That is the word I was looking for. It's just to be out with people and just getting that hum going in the room. You know, when everything's vibrating.
Exactly.
Listen, Jeff, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to chat with us. If people want to watch your videos or follow along with what you're up to or you know, read more about what you have to say, where can they go? Where can they check you out?
You guys can find me on IG at Rose Traore, R-O-Z-E-T-R-A-O-R-E, and you could get more info at chefrose.com.
Yeah, it's a great website. I got to say, I've looked at a lot of chef websites. Yours is good. Really nice. Great information, really fun. A lot of good videos.
I gotta say, I actually made that whole website, and I'm still surprised to how it's came along. So,
I mean, it's great. All right, so we have model, chef, advocate,
photographer now, actually, since photographer, the pandemic picked up that
designer. Camera. You're playing the pandemic field of like, you just get out in touch with me and I might be able to get something done for you.
Exactly.
All right. Well, listen, thank you so much. We have another song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Don't you tell them what to do. To you, sit yourself down, never between us, how you see right. That pride you got means everything to you. When I hit you on the knuckle, baby, look me dead in the eye. Watch you see it right through me too. Tambo solo. So good. Keep your pride. You'll find somebody else that will keep all your actions. You're doing justified. We're gonna destroy this room, right, Andy? Ready? Okay.
I'm Brian Kenny, board member at HRN and director of collections and archives for Hearst Western Properties. For 150 years, the Hearst family has raised cattle on 150,000 acres of rich, sustainable grasslands on California's Central Coast. I recently recorded an episode of HRN on Tour with the division manager for Hearst Ranch, Roland Camacho. We talked about the company's longstanding values.
You know, what it makes me think of is the thing that we run into a lot in this business with Hearst Ranch Beef was the scale of the business and the adjectives that we have. Give me the top adjectives.
100% free range and grass fed. That's probably the biggest one. All natural, no antibiotics, no ionophores, no hormones. So those are an American, local. Right. Love. So those are probably our biggest ones. You know, all raised, born and raised on one ranch. Everything is free range and grass fed its entire life.
Right.
And local California grown, American grown. So those are probably the biggest things that set us apart.
Hearst Ranch Beef is the nation's largest single source provider of 100% grass fed beef that is always free range and antibiotic free. Our beef will be available in Whole Foods Market's 44 California locations from San Luis Obispo to San Diego throughout the summer beginning June 1st. You can also order our 100% grass-fed beef online as part of a partnership with Larder Meat Company. Visit HearstRanch.com. That's H-E-A-R-S-T ranch.com.
Sean, welcome to Snacky Tunes. So happy that we could finally make this happen.
Oh, Darren, thanks, man.
It brought me so much pleasure to open up the whole show with Machine, which is a song from your high school band, Great Collector.
Man, I can't believe you did that.
That doesn't even go back to how far we've known each other, because we've known each other since middle school, and we met
I don't even remember. I feel like I've known you so long that I don't even remember the point in like where our lives intersected. It's just like it's always kind of been there. It's like I can't even remember far back when I didn't know you. It just doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, it was through – I wasn't in band, or I was in school band, but like I helped on the road. But you played drums, and that's how we met.
Yeah, yeah. We had a lot of common interests too, theater and art and music.
Food, yeah. It was funny because we saw each other last week when I was back in Philly, and one of the things that we talked about that's been going through my mind is this idea of both having ideas and keeping them on the inside, and then this idea of like letting them out into the world and the struggle with that. And I thought you said some really great things about it, and I'd love to hear some more of your thoughts about the idea of because for those who don't know you, you know, you're the drummer in Pissed Jeans, but you also do a ton of side projects, some of which we'll be digging into today. But you talked about having all these ideas for songs and bands and things like this. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about your creative process.
Okay. Where to start with that? Well, I mean, I was thinking, actually, that's funny. I was thinking about that a little bit today, that we were just away for a couple of days and I haven't been home, and, how to get like started on like an idea sometime, like how to get something going. I was just, that's what I was saying to myself. I was like, how do I get something going right now? I don't know. Creative process. Sometimes it's just like, it's really just like picking up like something and like hitting a drum. Really. That's like a, how to articulate this. Okay. I think naturally everybody had, I think there are a lot of, when you're doing something creative, I think that there's a lot, I find that I have, the closer sometimes I get to realizing an idea, the more naturally my, like I'll fight against my, I'll like self-sabotage myself. I'll fight against myself to, there's some sort of natural inclination to like, the closer you get to the finish line, the easier it is for you to quit and just like throw in the towel or whatever. I think that it's important for me to remember to like kind of cross that line. I think that there's a difference in that there are people that get right up against that line and they're like, nope, not for me, which I've definitely has happened to me too. But there's definitely times when it's like, you know, I've seen an idea all the way through to the end, and it's really satisfying. And also, the screwiest thing that I've realized is that you can see an idea all the way through to the end and turn around and start to look at it from like a judgmental or objective perspective and realize that it's just crap. there's no value in it at all, and you just spent all this time. That's like kind of an interest. That's one of the parts of when I try to make stuff. I try to make things in ways that are, I try to be as little as unjudgmental about like the quality, or if I even think it's a good tune or track that I'm working on. I try to not do that until the very end. I think that there are like Brian Eno, who's someone I think has influenced me in a lot of different ways, influenced so many people. But he definitely talks very simple. He's like good at articulating, I think, some of the simple cognitive things that go down, I think, when specifically people are making music. And one of them is to like listening from a like a worker's perspective and listening from a listener's perspective. And I think that there's two different ways, especially with music, to do that. And like kind of part of the creative process is trying to be a listener at the right time and a worker at the right time, and trying to figure out what times those are and like how to. It's not the easiest thing in the world to like make something or play something and, you know, not instantly think, oh, this is cool or this is not. That's kind of like how it gets. It's a little bit of like is a paradox the right word? It's a little bit of a, works against itself, because what gets you into like being creative, I think, is that you have taste in stuff, or you decided that you like certain things over, and you dislike other things. And I think that I try to make things that I like. Like, I just try to make music that I like to listen to. And so when you're trying to make something and not really think about if you like it or not, and just trying to like make work on the idea, kind of can work against itself in weird ways. I don't know. That's what makes the whole thing interesting, is that there are no rules. So you can make up limitations and boundaries and set guidelines for yourself, and like, you know, you don't have to follow them either. What was the question?
No, that's it. But you know, it's interesting because you do talk about this thing about working on something and then coming to the end of this creative project and being like, well, that wasn't very good. But to be honest, I actually have found that getting ideas out or following something through has validity, especially as I get older and I go, oh, you know, I tried doing something that way, or I thought this was the right way to process something or work with someone or do like that, and I did it and it didn't work. And so then when I go into the next project, I go like, well, I have a reference point of what I don't want to do, or a mistake that I don't want to make, or you know, it's like, oh, if I had taken something in a different direction in this past project, I could have wound up here.
Yeah, I think about that too. And it's like, that can maybe sometimes be, I mean, sure, what is that? Like, one angle is you like learn from your mistakes, right? You make a mistake and you say, next time, I'm not going to do it this way. Or, you know, like, I apply that to, like, if I'm just trying to work on, like, a little beat or something, you know, try to work it out and lay it down and, like, kind of, like, do overdubs or whatever. It doesn't always work out, and sometimes you just kind of have to, like, you have to get through to the end to realize it's not working out and to figure out why it's not working out so you can go back to the beginning and, like, fix it, you know?
Yeah. Have you found during this time, the last, you know, 3-4 months with the pandemic and the big social revolution we're going through, that your creative process or what you're thinking about creatively has changed?
I don't know if it's changed. It's definitely changed in a lot of ways. It's slowed down a lot. There's like less urgency. I don't feel the similar urgency of needing to get stuff. I have so much, there's so much time that there's like, I can always get to it later. That's like one of those, that's like a creative resistance. I think that's like a ploy of creative resistance is like, well, I can always just do the dishes first because, you know, I have nothing else to do today. Oh, I can always do this something else first. I can always, you know, go for a raw jog or do some push-ups or something. I'll say that like the things that I actually do. I've also had time to like, I also think it happens like, you know, there's also something that when I don't have like the right amount of limit, if I don't have limitations, here's the way to say this, in the arena where like every single thing in the universe is possible, I'm no good. I need to have some sort of limitation. I need to have some sort of like time frame. I need to have like, you know, even if it's like, I need to have like a certain amount of like, for, you know, just as a reference, it's like having like a certain amount of tape. You need to have like, one of the funny things about like working digitally too is like there's no like time limit. There's no like,
yeah.
On some of the earliest recordings we made that I was part of, like a lot of it had to do with like you were done when it was done, but also like you only had so much tape. Like there was a physical limitation of how much information you could capture at a certain time, and like you had to actually pay for that stuff. Now with like one of the pitfalls of like digital technology is like there is no tape. You could just always go back and add something. So knowing when to like stop, even, and like knowing when to like stop picking at something or like call, like considering it done, is something that I've tried to work on recently. And that's, I've lost this, like some of the, I had the ability maybe like a year ago, I was really good at knowing when just to like stop working on something or call something done, or, and now
that
it's
was
like
it.
Yeah, you know, and now it's like you just pick it to death. And
yeah.
I find myself like stalling or not feeling right about like a certain take or something. And I just like, you know, chew on it endlessly. Like, you know, just chew. You can't, like, you're not supposed to chew all the way to disintegrate your food. You're just like, you don't endlessly be chewing. At some point you have to like swallow and be fulfilled. And so like, you know,
when it goes from something tasty to just cud.
Yeah, exactly. So that's like, I mean, I guess that's like definitely become a factor. I think like, I mean, definitely gotten the family's definitely been more involved in the creative process now too. There's like everybody's around and
You
know,
you did a song with your son, right? With him on vocals.
Yeah, we did a couple. He's definitely been like into like vocals and like putting delay on vocals and sort of weird effects and stuff, and it's great. If that's what's getting him interested, then it's been really fun to have a lot of time to do that with him. That's been like cool.
Awesome. Listen, I want to play the first track. Hash Fail. What's the story behind that?
I was trying to emulate another kind of thing that I heard. It was like this weird drum sound. It was like I was trying to emulate a drum sound that I had heard recently on a recording. And I failed at it and didn't get what I was looking for. And then like went back a couple of like last month to it and just like started picking apart at it and like adding other weird stuff to it. And it sort of came together. It's still kind of coming together, actually. I think that, you know, maybe I might add something else to, like, it's still, you know, it evolves. So I dig where it's at now, though. I'm really liking where it got to, though.
Awesome. Well, here we go. Sean McGinnis, a.k.a. Sean on the drums, here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're with one of my oldest friends, Sean McGinnis, a.k.a. Sean on the drums, a.k.a. the drummer of Piss Jeans. And, you know, it's pretty amazing to see you in Piss Jeans, not just because I love the band and I've seen you play so many times, but in us growing up, there's always been these North Stars of types of bands who are just like, whoa, those guys, they're like, cool forever. They get critically acclaimed, but like they have a dedicated fan base, and that's the Jeans, which is super cool to be in a band like that, you know. And you're on Sub Pop, which is like that the end. That's it, right?
That's a really nice thing to say. Thank you.
But you are telling me about, and I might butcher this, but you're telling me about when you put out the last album. You said like one of the best lines you saw was from a fan on a message board that was like, wow, like another great album, like these guys keep doing it.
Yeah, which was something like that. Yeah. Go on,
No. Which I loved, because like that really is what careers or the ability to keep being creative is these days, right? There is no like silver bullet. There is no album. that sells millions, at least, you know, there's maybe, you know, unless you're like Beyonce or something like that, or at like at the rarefied level of that. But to keep 15 years being in a band, having people love you, you know, that's an amazing thing. And even though I shared my thoughts on it, you know, what is like to be a part of a you know, an art project that gets to continually put out creative materials, you know, for so long?
I mean, well, oh, that's like, those are really nice things to say about us. And I think that, thank you for saying those things. what's it like? I mean, I feel really lucky, like pretty fortunate. I think that like, I think a lot of things, I think that like, I feel very fortunate to be able to have something like that for as like an outlet, you know, to have, yeah, have a valve, like to have a place to like funnel creative energy and just like, not even creative energy, just like energy from my life into something. To have that, I think, is really lucky and really special and really rare. I think especially for the amount of time doing it has been, I mean, we all still get along, fortunately, and I really enjoy playing music with those guys. I think that,
yeah,
I've definitely, you know, it's I've played music in other situations where it just hasn't felt right. It hasn't felt, you don't have the same sort of connection, or like you just, people are thinking different, where it's like it's just not as naturally fluid, or you know, you have to do an extra, you have to work really hard to like get something done. And, you know, it doesn't, with, to find a situation like, piss jeans, to have that sort of like, I don't know what to call it, like that, whatever the relationship we have, or the communication we have, and like the trust that we have, and the fact that we have been able to like continue to create things that we're all like really in agreement that we like, you know, we all feel really, I mean, there's always a couple of songs that like we, you know, that, not everybody's going to be on, like, you can't love every sure. little thing, but this, but man, like just the, like how consistently we are all on the same page together is like where I, there's no chance that you only, like, if you get one of those in your life, it's like, you're lucky. I feel like, yeah. you know, yeah. and I feel like I got, like we all found that. I think that that's really, I think it's really important to me. And I think that like, it's, you know, I think that these other guys would say the same. I think, you know, and it's like fun to boot. And that's not to say that like, we're always like, it's like an, like, you know, where it's like, we definitely have like conflict and like discussion, but that's like also part of what makes it interesting. And like, we can resolve yeah. stuff too. Yeah. It's incredible.
You know, to have creative partners that you have evolved with and trust for 15 years, the results have got to be pretty amazing.
I mean, I think the music speaks for itself.
Yeah. And
I don't know if that will translate on this. I mean, yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's like how lucky I feel like even that I've actually had, it's not like even the first time. I mean, I love, like, the jeans are great, and I've had, there have actually been, like, maybe two other situations in my life, or three other situations where I felt, you know, a similar sense of, like understanding and communication through people, like, playing music with them. It's, like, pretty, when you get to that point, or get to, like, the piss with the jeans, we just, like, you know, there are just no plans to stop, you know, no one, like, yeah, it's pretty... I think that we have actually is, I think it's kind of unique. We are like, we're on a great, we're not like, I mean, what Beyonce does is like, that's an incredible amount of work. And I mean, I think you mentioned earlier, and like, that's like a respectable in its yeah. own right. It's nothing like that. I think that's like, her art is like is a very different thing, but it both takes work, I guess. We're lucky to have such a, like a understanding record label that's, wants to like, I mean, basically has put zero pressure on us at all to do anything, and has always just been there for us too. Whenever we're ready, they're just always there.
To have that like patron mentality mm-hmm. of
saying when the jeans are ready to put out an album, we're here to support both the creative process, the recording process, because I know that that's also evolved. And I know that you've asked for more over the years and they've given it to you in many ways. And that trust between like a label and an artist is also pretty rare, especially one as, you know, legendary as Sub Pop, who could have their pick of, not saying anyone, but you know, they're not hunting for artists in some ways.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. I think we've been on that. I think we've been, 2006 was the first time we put out a record on that label. And I think that, I still can't believe that they're still down.
Yeah.
You know, we've met so many like amazing people through that record label and like so many supportive people. They're just like, it's just like endless like support and just like so many like incredible friendships. You know, it sounds so gooey, but it's the truth. It's like, those are really the things, like when I'm thinking about all the stuff we're doing, like that's one of the more important things I think just in my life, is just like that's how I like connect with people, through like playing music and like working in restaurants. It's like how I want it's the same to me. They're interchangeable. It's like about connecting with people and like, you know, I don't know, help, I don't want to say helping people, but you know what I'm saying?
I mean, I don't have to tell you the way I feel about connecting with people through food and music. And, with the book that we now have coming out, so many things that I was like, am I the only one who feel this way? Or I know a few people feel this way, but to see people all over the world feel the same way from childhood through their professional career, that these two artistic disciplines are just a way to have relationships with people, either as, you know, as you said before, as like a maker or a taker in some ways. It's just really amazing.
Man, you know, congratulations on the book, by the way. I saw some internet pictures of it. It looks incredible, man. I can't wait to check it out. It looks so good. So pro, man. Oh my gosh.
I would say the same way that you feel about Sub Pop is the same way I feel about Fade In. Being like, really?
Yeah.
Like, okay, cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it feels nice. Like, it's like validation in a way. And or that at least, like, you know, somebody else at least shares the same kind of value for ideas that I do. That's like really, really cool. That's like the most comforting thing on earth.
I know. All right, let's get to the next song. We got Chant One.
Oh, yeah, okay, cool.
What's Chant One about?
Yeah, okay, here we go. This one I can talk about. This one I made myself a specific note because I was having trouble getting stuff done. I said, like, start with vocals, which is something that I never do. I was like, I hate to do vocals. I dislike the sound of my own voice. I don't really know how to use it. I've never figured out how to use it as, like, you know, like an in, like kind of more of an instrument, or sort of in a way that it like benefits the music, or I never really maybe thought about it in that way. But I was like, I'm just gonna to it. It was like a way to annoy myself. I was to start with vocals, so I did, and that's and then I had this weird vocal line that somehow was in, so I don't know how it came about. I just made a drum loop that sort of fell right into time with it, and I finished this one in like March. Maybe it needs something else too. It might need a guitar or something. I don't know. Maybe I'll send it to somebody to put a guitar on it or something. I'm digging it. It's like kind of dark.
Okay, cool. All right, well, here we go. We got Chant One, Sean McGinnis, aka Sean, on the drums here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you. Welcome back. That was Chant One. A little dark, but we're in some dark times right now. But, you know, appropriate. So, you know, we talked a little bit about your creative process, and we talked about you being in the jeans, but I want to focus a little bit on your solo projects and the importance of having a solo outlet as an artist, especially when you're in this long-running projects of Piss Jeans. Why has it been so important for you to have your own thing, your own little side projects? Because for many people, it would just be like, I'm in a band. They're super popular. That is all I need for my creative output.
I don't know. How do I? I think it's. I feel really lucky to have a little bit of an outlet. I have. I mean, I have a little space in the house we live in our basement. It's not by any means like a soundproof booth thing. It's quiet, but it's still in the house. It's still pretty loud, and I have to, you know, I'm grateful for my family that lives here to allow that to happen. The jeans always are like in existence. We're not always playing every day, all day. Sometimes I wish we had, you know, you get go to the practice at 9 a.m. and you leave at 5 p.m. Like, that sounds like kind of interesting. Also, maybe a way to burn everybody out real fast. But we're not like, although it's always existing, we're not constantly playing. Right now we're like working out ideas, and it's been interesting to do that remotely and like just discussing things weekly and passing, you know, files back and forth. I think that for me, having a sort of solo out, just to see, like, you know, I wanted to first see if I could just start making recordings at my house. This is maybe 7 or 8 years ago now. Just trying to figure out how to record stuff, and that's sort of, you know, you have to create something to record. So I started making weird, just tons of weird junk, so much junk, and just utter crap. And then kind of through the process of like figuring out how to like record or like capture sounds or start to make like weird sounds and sort of edit tracks and loop stuff, I just kind of started to figure out only recently, actually. I've only kind of figured out what recently in the last couple of months, everything that I've sort of arrived at, I'm really like I like it. It's very rare that I'm surprised at how like pleased with myself. So it's like I'm not always that. I'm like rarely am I that happy with stuff, and it's like been. It's felt like a very much like it's felt like really. It sounds so pretentious, but it has been like exploratory, like really figuring out like kind of like getting to know my instrument and like other instruments in like just like, you know, learning more about them and how to play them and like how to put things together. And it's just a really, man, I think it's important that people should be passionate about something. I feel really lucky that I have this to, like, I feel very passionate about it. It's very satisfying for me if like other people like it. That's great. I'm like, it makes me happy. But it's really like, I kind of just want to make stuff that I want to listen to or play for my friends or share with my friends and ask them about and talk about. It's like, I don't know. It really is. There's nothing quite like it. I'm grateful to have it. So like, it's not. I don't. I think it would be unfair to ask all of that of the jeans too, to ask that much of everybody in the band. Like, we've been going at the same pace we've been going now for a while, and I think we all sort of have. We have expectations of each other, and I think we sort of, everybody sort of laid out where their expectations for everything are, and we're all in agreement in it. So like, you know, it's pretty, which is like, that's like a really just nice to have it operate. And I can like clearly go, you know, I can find other places to make stuff on my own or work with other people. They're like, you know, my friend Mike, who lives in DC, Washington DC, I've known him for,
love Mike.
A long, long time, Mike Patillo. He and I have been making music together. We started making music together when I was 17, and we recently, in the last like 3 or 4 years, have started another project together that is totally different and like really just kind of make it up as you go. And really been like an incredibly, like, I don't know, just a really, he's an amazing person to like be in a studio with, and be like in a, like be creative. He's like a great, I really love being creative with him, because he's such a really insanely creative and smart dude. And we made music together recently that I really like. I like this. I would list stuff that I'm like, I listen to it. I do. I have a tape in my car and I listen to it when I drive around. I'm like, this is great. You know, great. I made this. It's like you cook yourself, you eat it, make it the same. You make a really good sandwich because you want to eat it. You know, I'm like,
yeah,
I'm going to just make this track because I want to listen to it. You know?
And I love that.
Yeah. It's like, that's like, I mean, that's kind of where that I love. I feel good shooting, like that's like, you know, aiming for that is like, that's what made, I feel good about that. I can in that environment, I can like comfortably create inside that environment, like knowing that that's the goal. And I think that that's like not an unrealistic expectation of myself.
Amazing. Well, listen, I want to make sure that we have enough time for one more song. We got number 13 Vox, but if people want to check out what you're up to or keep an eye out for what's going on with the jeans, where can they go to follow along?
Google Piss Jeans. And, you know, the jeans are all on, I think all the jeans stuff is on Bandcamp. There's a Sean on the Drums Bandcamp. There's an On the Ifness Bandcamp through Udios. The On the Ifness. That's with Mike Cotillo. And there's probably a Street Stains band camp too. We still, that Street Stains record is still there. That was myself and my friend Chris Richards. He's like a great guitar player and a great singer and a fantastic music critic and kick-ass dad. See what I did there?
Yeah.
Threw my buddy a compliment. You can email me. You know, I'm around.
He's around.
I'm around.
Awesome. Well, Sean, thank you so much for taking time out to chat with us.
All I have is time, my friend. I love talking to you.
It was great seeing you the other week. It's great having this on the record. I appreciate it. Thank you to everyone. Thank you to Rose for being a part of the show. If you do have a chance and you got like 25 extra bucks, go pick up the Snacky Tunes book. You can get it on fadin.com. Pre-order now. Bro. Yeah, it's so weird.
Dude, congrats. Sign me up. Thanks, I pre-order? Where do I pre-order again?
Fadin.com, baby. Search Snacky Tunes.
All right.
That's snack with a Y for those who haven't been listening for the last 11 years. All right, here we go. Number 13 Vox. Thanks for everyone. Crazy that this is episode 450.
Holy
yeah, we'll see you next time as we march on to 500.
420.
No, this is episode 450. It's the same thing like with Piss Jeans. No one's told us to stop, so we're not stopping.
Keep going.
Keep going.
If someone did say stop, that's no reason to stop.
Just keep going anyway. All right, here we go. Sean McGinnis, aka Sean on the Drums, number 13 Vox. Thanks for everyone. Thanks for all the support. And we'll see you next week here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.